Hi, and thank you for tuning in. I always miss that opener. Well, thank you for tuning in again once more to the Mad Scientists Exposed show. And I thought today's topic would be a little fun and a little scary, robots. They seem to be in the news all the time now these days, and particularly scary was, the incident in Dallas. First we heard there were he was dead, and then we heard, oh no, we went in after him with a robot and bombed him with a robot. I guess the robot was carrying the bomb. I don't know how they got it up to. Maybe it was disguised as a vase of flowers and with the bomb in the vase. I don't know how they got it near him and blew him up. And I have my doubts about these things because they had been running stories in the news, and Drudge had picked up on them about, robots coming as intelligent, robots coming, they're going to wipe out mankind, robots as weapons, and drones have been in the news for years, and I think drones are nothing but flying robots, and I used to think of drones as nothing but remote control planes, and those have been around forever. My brother had one when we were kids, or he had several. He'd built them in, and our dad would take us out to the field, and he would fly his remote-controlled plane around. And if you were with the club, then you had to, mark out which frequency you had, and they'd put colored flags on your antenna and your transmitter and all that kind of stuff. And I guess drones these days, they must be running on the Internet. I don't know, because they'll have somebody sitting in Nevada somewhere driving drones in wherever war-torn countries there are in Africa. And I know there was one that we bombed, a terrorist who happened to be a U.S. citizen, and there was a lot of to-do about that because he got bombed without a trial. And, he was planning terrorist attacks, and they took him out. At that point, he had become a war criminal. So there's a lot of hard ethical questions as to the uses of these things, remote control, and it gives us more ability to take out people without trials. I remember the first Gulf War, even, there was a lot of back and forth. Do we want to take out Saddam or not, or just defeat his army? And when you're just defeating an army, it's all nameless, can put that fog of goodwill over the whole situation. But when you actually put a name on somebody that you're going to go after him and kill him, then it becomes something a bit more like murder instead of war. And so we did not take out Saddam Hussein in the first Gulf War. But, everybody knows a few years later, George Bush Jr. came in and finished the job, and we did take him out. And then it was not such a big deal anymore, taking out people by name, by acts of war and remote control murder and all that, then instead of just taking down, just a regime change in Libya, then it was, we actually had a name on Gaddafi and we took him out by name, even though he had supposedly reformed his ways and wasn't terrorizing the United States anymore. So there's all this, different viewpoints on it. Some of the headlines that have been on lately in Drudge, I titled the show Robots as Tools, Explorers, and Weapons, but there's a whole range of ways to think about these things. They've been in fiction for years and years and years and years. I grew up reading Isaac Asimov, and I actually read the book I, Robot, before anybody had a thought of making a movie out of it. And, I was a big Isaac Asimov fan. And he would set these scenarios far out into millennia, into the future. So I read the Foundation trilogy, and there was almost like a religious craft around predicting the future based on statistics. Well, if the crowd does this, or if the population does that, what will happen into the future? And if this planet does that, or this group of planets, the occupants do such and such. And then they would forecast, and they would make their moves almost like a chess match into the future of that time, which was, set many thousands of years into the future from us. And, people would just kind of, in the book, the characters in the book would kind of look back on Earth as like a fond, almost a mythical source of the human race, and so far in the past and so far out of memory, and they're not even sure where it is anymore. It's like this, mythical Garden of Eden, which is kind of like the Garden of Eden is to us now, this beautiful place where food grows everywhere and you don't have to work, you just eat and all that. And you know, I kind of, looking back at Earth from the space pictures from deep space, comparing it to other planets, I think maybe the whole Earth is, you know, just exceptionally beautiful and almost to a mythical level. It's so beautiful compared to the other planets, at least in my eyes. But here we have a rush to Mars, and, you know, we've been to the moon, and we've left some tools behind that ran for a while, and but even before that, and I know in the 60s, we, you know, we kids would watch Lost in Space, and but once Star Trek came on, I kind of lost interest in Lost in Space, because that was grown-ups going far out into the galaxy, whereas, as opposed to this family of, you know, just a few people flying around on a flying saucer, lost and not ever able to find their way back to Earth. And that was kind of like the space age Gilligan's Island, where if they ever found their way home again, the show would be over. So yeah, Gilligan's Island was a comedy. Lost in Space wasn't a comedy, but it was fun for little kids. But, you know, Star Trek came out and that was just it. And so, you know, and there was a robot character in that Lost in Space show. It was, all I knew is they called him Robot, and he was the friend to the little boy was named Will Robinson, and you know, if danger was approaching, the robot sensed it. We don't know how he knew. It was Robot ESP or something, and he would wave his arms. He had this glass bubble head, and he would wave his arms, danger, Will Robinson, danger, Will Robinson, and, you know, and the robot was like the kid's best friend. And that's all he had in life besides his sister, this his parents, this Dr. Smith, who was along on the trip, who had kind of nefarious intentions. He was always in it for himself, no matter what was going on. And this other guy, who I guess was a pilot, and he was kind of like the on-again, off-again, sort of like winking but never touch romantic interest of Will Robinson's older sister. And I don't really know what the older sister did, you know, on the team of that ship. I don't know. But, you know, of course, the mother did the cooking and the laundry. And, you know, of course, you know, a lot of that was automated. She'd the dirty clothes in the washing machine. And they would come out all folded and wrapped in plastic, like you would buy, you know, a shirt from a stack of shirts in Walmart. I don't know if they even wrap them in plastic anymore. But, you know, that was, so it was just kind of, it was a fun little show. But, we've come a long way as thinking of robots. You know, we have robots as tools, and some of them are coming into our lives, you know, robots as servants, the robots as explorers, which we're seeing with the Mars rovers and robots, but now we're seeing robots as weapons in Dallas. And we have remote control robots, that would be like the drones. And then we have programmable robots, which again is the NASA robots. And then these artificial intelligence robots, these are the ones that are making a lot of news lately on Drudge, because they're trying to develop artificial intelligence robots that can program themselves. And then they just give them some rules, and the robots like live within those rules and, you know, go about their duty serving mankind, supposedly. Or maybe they turn rogue, which was the theme of the movie iRobot. And I guess they eventually made a movie from Lost in Space, but I believe I missed that one. So all I can, you know, have memories of is that the 60s black and white TV show. That's how far back it goes. And yes, I am that old. Oh dear. but I'm younger than, you know, in my thinking, than a lot of younger people I know. So anyway, and of course we have this new concept of self-driving cars, and they'll have to live within, you know, the rules of the road. And but the spooky thing is, you know, yes, they can detect cars around them, but now the new cars coming out, I guess by law they're supposed to be able to communicate between each other. So you'll be driving down the highway, and every car knows where every other car is. And from some tests that I've seen, you know, videos and things, you can drive a lot more cars a lot closer together that way. So as the population of cars grows, you don't need to build as many new roads, because they all kind of like move as a unit, and you know, there's not the reaction time that a person driving would have to stop the car if it needs to stop. But there's all this scary stuff, because if it's all programmed and connected to each other and connected to the big GPS in the sky and the internet and all this stuff, then you have some government controllers just drooling for the chance to, oh, we'll just catch all our fugitives that way. We'll just, you know, once they're in a car and we detect that it's them in the car, then we'll just have the car drive them into the station and we'll arrest them there. And, you know, everything becomes so easy that way. And maybe it's not so easy because last month a guy was riding in his self-driving robot car. And I forget who it was. He was some high-tech CEO guy. And, you know, the instructions when you buy these self-driving cars, you know, there's only a few. I guess, you know, if you have the money, you can get in a test, get in on the early testing of them. And the instructions are you have to pay attention as if you're driving the car. You have to pay attention anyway. Because what happened was the car detected, the little camera detected, well, it didn't detect. There was this truck with a big white side, that 18-wheeler that pulled out in front of them, turning left across his path, and the car failed to detect the contrast difference between the truck and the sky, and just plowed full speed right into the truck, and the guy was killed instantly. And, oh, they're blaming it. He was running a movie in his DVD player or whatever. Well, who knows what was happening? I mean, I'll listen to podcasts as I'm driving, or if my kids are in the back seat and they're running DVDs, you know, I'll listen to the dialogue. You know, we can't prove that this guy was watching a movie rather than watching the windows. You know, maybe he was looking out the wrong window. You know, I love when I'm a passenger in a car and somebody else is driving, because then I get to look at the mountains and the scenery as I'm driving, you know, down the freeway between cities, and, you know, the risings and the falls of the saguaros and the flowers and, you know, the sunsets and the rainstorms. And, you know, it's also interesting if you don't have to stare at the white line down the freeway. So I can see where I would really love having a self-driving car. And if it, you know, if they ever reached a point where you didn't have to pay attention, I'd just sleep between cities, you know, and catch up on my sleep. I could go any time of day. I wouldn't have to worry about fatigue or drinking caffeine at 10 o'clock at night in order to make it between, you know, cities like 2 hours apart. I'll drive between Tucson and Phoenix quite frequently. And so there's always the good, and then it seems like every advance in science, every advance in engineering comes the weapons with it. And, you know, just in the last, just today, there's articles on drudge, a killer robot car, and robot injures toddler and knocks down and runs over child and makes injuries. And, yeah, cops use killer robot for the first time. So there's always problems. You know, every advance brings the other edge of the sword. And, you know, I'm so tired of that. I wish we could just advance and everybody be good. Everybody be trustworthy. And, you know, because I can see these coming to a point in, you know, few decades where, you know, every bank robber in the land will have their own robot, and they'll just go drill in the sides of banks, or try to. Or, of course, we'll have the banksters themselves just electronically suck up your money out of your account. That's already happening in Greece and Europe. So, you know, when there's like a thin line between computers and robots. So I guess, you know, it's a matter of definition. I guess a robot is something that's self-mobile. That's the only way I can think of it. I mean, you could say your dishwasher is a robot because you put the dishes in, you don't have to do a thing. It just, the dishes come out clean. And they don't stack themselves in the cabinet like the Will Robinson washing machine, you know. And, you know, there are some advances. And someday, you know, if I ever live somewhere where I have a lawn again, I want one of those robotic lawnmowers. Because I used to mow the lawn, and it was, you know, in Tucson, things could be kind of dry and dusty when I had a lawn. And, you know, you have to get out the dust basket, everything, and mow the lawn. And you know, it was nice. I only had to do it, I don't know, a month or so during the grass growing season. But, you know, it was an irritation. Where I've heard grass can grow so fast in Houston in the height of summer with the humidity and the rain and the heat that you actually have to mow the lawn every single day. At, you know, 6 in the morning, people are out there mowing their lawns. And one of these robotic lawnmowers would be great. Now, I've never seen one personally. I have seen the robotic floor vacuum cleaners, and they're not really vacuum cleaners. They're the equivalent of sweepers. floor sweepers. You know, you push them on a stick and there's a little spinning brush underneath. Well, these are just, they're robotic. They have the batteries and the wheels and the spin, and they bump the wall, they turn the other way. And I don't know, I guess they kind of learn as they bump the wall where the walls are. And so if you put this little beacon, always have this little beacon on a shelf somewhere, that it can orient itself and it can learn its way around your house and not waste so much battery. But, you know, the batteries on those, we were running those about 10 years ago, and they would run and floor sweep, and, you know, they were kind of cute, and, you know, they kind of spooked the cats and stuff like that, and it was all fun and games. But then they just wouldn't recharge anymore, and, you know, we would replace the batteries for big bucks, you know, every few months, and they just wouldn't hold a charge, and we just gave up on them. So anyway, let me take a break here. If you want to join the conversation, if you have any experience with robots or self-driving cars or Mars rovers or anything like that, I do actually know people who are involved in designing those things. So if you're tuned in, you don't want to talk about robots, the number is 347-324-3704. You can just listen straight if you want to go mobile and not be sitting on a computer somewhere listening to this. You can just listen at that phone number, 347-324-3704. And if you want to join the conversation, then you just hit 1. And I'll see the little mark come up, and I'll say, yay, somebody that wants to join the conversation. So I'll be back in a moment here.
You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea. But you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at SerenityRug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's SerenityRug.com.
There are a lot of problems with Common Core. I don't even have time to go into most of them. But a step in the right direction would be to give local communities, teachers, parents control over their schools so they can design curriculums and standards to best meet the needs of their students and get the federal government out of education.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
Hi, so I'm back, and I was just kind of browsing some articles on self-driving trucks, because I can see that this would put a lot of people out of business, all these truck drivers. And this is Wired Magazine. Just a month ago, May 17th of this year, the truck driving industry is ready for revolution. Autonomous trucks aren't as sexy as driverless cars, but they could have a bigger impact on our lives. Within years, they could make the roads safer, the air cleaner, and deliveries cheaper. Well, wow, if they're all electric, I suppose. All of this is closer than you think. Last year, Daimler unveiled the world's first autonomous semi. Volvo is working with Europe's Project Sartre to develop road trains where a caravan of robo-trucks follows a leader. And that's kind of what I saw with those cars and those images of cars that can drive so close together, you can fit a lot more traffic on the highway without slowing it down. So the effort makes sense, the article continues, makes sense when you consider that trucks carry around 70% of the freight that transported across the U.S. and demand is growing. But shiny new trucks like Daimler's autonomous Freightliner will a long time to penetrate the market. Daimler says that it won't start happening until about 2025, meaning the 3.46 million big rigs already on U.S. roads aren't getting any smarter anytime soon. Well, I hope this is a gradual thing so that truck drivers can retire in time as they get older, because we're talking, that's only 9 years from now. And, we don't want to lay everybody off at once. That's why a new startup is developing a $30,000 kit that can make any truck built since 2013 autonomous. Wow, and this article goes on and on. Otto's kit will allow trucks to handle themselves on the highway, safely keeping within a lane, maintaining a set of speed, and slowing or stopping as necessary. Well, I guess that if it detects the contrast difference between the sky and another truck or the road and your car, we're all going to end up with neon green cars so that these robots can see us better rather than the silver that's so popular. It's just a taste thing for me. I don't like silver gray cars. I wouldn't want to own one. They don't bother me on the highway. But I test drove a black car a couple of years ago, and my car is blue. It's a little darker than the sky, but I can see where some camera might have some trouble distinguishing between my car at night, or even in my car. But it will all be in bright red cars. They tried for a while to pawn off. This is a side note. The beautiful red fire trucks, there was about a decade there from, I don't know, the 80s to the late 90s or whatever, where they tried to pawn off these lime green fire trucks. Oh, well, the eye can see that color easier. Well, yes, but everything's that color. So it was much harder to pick out these lime green yellow trucks from traffic. But, make them red, they're much easier to see again. And somebody got a lot of money for that pronouncement, even though it was false. And that happens, consultants, charge big bucks for their advice. And sometimes their advice is just to change what you have so that they can claim they earned their money. I'm a little bit cynical about that. Anyway, so these trucks that they're showing in the pictures, an auto self-driving truck, they're solid white. They're not that different from the roads they're driving on. They have these, this picture is taken in the daytime on this European freeway, but I see the lights in the freeway. Some of the freeways in Europe, they have these solar-powered lights in the road so that when the sun goes down, the road lights up, and it's kind of like driving along a landing strip, And those are pretty. I'd love to see those in the U.S. someday, just because I think they'd be pretty, like driving in fairyland. This road is that color, goes off this way, and that other road is this color and goes off that way, and you have the yellow do not cross lane, and the red or the blue or the white on the right side do not cross that, or there's the shoulder. I can just see it would be a kind of a pretty thing. But of course, if you're not driving and all these self-driving cars are driving, then you might not get to see it. I think eventually we're going to have roads that are filled with empty self-driving cars because everybody's going to send their car off to, drop off their kids at school and then send off the car back empty to pick them up. And in fact, you wouldn't even need any parking garages in the downtowns because people will take their cars into work and be dropped off and then you know, summon their car to come get them when they're ready to go home at the end of the day. And so now I'm hearing about all these plans for, nobody will own a car. They'll all be rented, or you'll rent time and you just summon the service and it'll come get you, kind of like Uber with human drivers now. And, of course, Uber, I guess they're driving themselves out of business because they're dropping their rates so much that it's almost not worth it for people to I don't want to badmouth Uber. I've never used them. My son has toyed with working for Uber, and I just keep reading these articles where, you know, the rates that you're allowed to charge just keep dropping until you almost can't support yourself, you know, driving all day in your car and putting the miles on your car while you do these fares. And, you know, they're trying to be competitive with the taxi services and the other services. I guess there's competitors with the same, like, business model as Uber. I think Lyft is one. There's some others. And then there's the cabbie unions that are protesting downtowns and various cities, trying to get them outlawed in different cities. The Uber, what are they going to say about these self-driving cars? You know, they raised the minimum rate, the minimum salaries in a lot of these fast food places. And so what are they doing? They're robotizing the job. So, you know, it just takes a little computer programmer and programming, and you can have a little robot flipping the burgers and taking the money, you know, just swipe your card and it sends your lunch out on a conveyor belt and fucking kids, you know, and what is the world coming to? Anyway, so these self-driving trucks are a lot of social implications for them. All your groceries arrive, you know, just kind of drive up, plug into the grocery store, and I guess you need people to unload the pallets. Well, they'll robotize that eventually, too. Everything, all work will be done by robots, and human beings will be nothing left but to explore and create, and that's our spiritual future. And I'm being a little bit sarcastic, because some people like driving their trucks and crossing the country and seeing the country back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, I've driven across the country a few times, and I do enjoy it. I don't know that I'd want it as a full-time job, but you know, there's robots will make errors because humans have judgment that trucks don't. Let's see. There's another headline on, who is this, TechCrunch.com. The driverless truck is coming and it's going to automate millions of jobs. And, well, it's just part of the whole automation process. The convoy of self-driving trucks recently drove across Europe and arrived at the port of Rotterdam. No technology will automate away more jobs or drive more economic efficiency than the driverless truck. Shipping a full truckload from L.A. to New York costs around $4,500 today, $4,500, with labor representing 75% of the cost. But those labor savings aren't the only gains to be had from the adoption of driverless trucks. When trucks are restricted by law from driving more than 11 hours a day without taking an 8-hour break, a driverless truck can drive nearly 24 hours a day. That means the technology would effectively double the output of the U.S. transportation network at 25% the cost. And the savings become even more significant when you account for fuel efficiency gains. The optimal cruising speed from a fuel efficiency standpoint is around 45 miles an hour, whereas trucks who are paid by the mile drive much faster. Further fuel efficiencies will be had as the self-driving fleets adopt platooning technologies such as Peloton technology, and they have a link to that, allowing trucks to draft behind one another in highway trains. That reminds me, way back years ago, somebody taught me about drafts on the freeway. I made the mistake of joining a friend on the back of a motorcycle, and he got behind the semi. And we had about, I don't know, 12 miles to go on the freeway out to the county fairground. And he got behind a truck where he had no wind resistance. And he was on that little motorcycle that had almost, you know, it had super good gas mileage anyway. He was going to get us to the county fair for free. And that truck was booking. It was over 80. I was absolutely terrified. And, you know, I beat on his shoulders and forced him to slow down because I just, you know, I think that was, if it wasn't the last time I rode that bike, it was close to it because I just don't have the guts for that. And since then, I've known two people killed by their motorcycles, and one was killed instantly. Another broke his neck and lingered as a quadriplegic for about 7 months. And then he got some kind of a he was in and out of the ER, not the ER, but the ICU with pneumonia, and he eventually succumbed, which is, it was a horrible thing because he was a man in his 50s and he was very well known in Tucson. And anyway, you know, he was a musician. That's why he was so well known. And I don't foresee self-driving motorcycles, although I suppose it could happen. I don't see why not. There are these popular tadpole motorcycles, you know, there's three wheels with the two wheels in the front and the one wheel in the back. And I guess those are particularly stable. And I haven't seen anything in the news about self-driving motorcycles, but those would just be pleasure vehicles anyway, as these trucks would be workhorses, which is essentially, I think that, you know, you could think of them as trains on the freeway is what they're really going to end up being. But the trains, you know, with the fixed track technology, there's not a lot of adaptation that you can do, whereas trucks can go anywhere you can go, you know, except unless you're going to, you know, go hiking or something. Anyway, so I have my list here, robots as tools, robots as servants, robots as explorers, and I don't know how many of you caught the arrival at Jupiter last week with the Juno space probe, and that took, from the sound of the news stories I read, about 20 years in development, you know, developing the tools, the science instruments to take measurements from Jupiter and the surrounding area, the magnetic fields and the rings, and calculating the the moon orbit so it didn't crash it, you know, anything like that, and programming it. They had to program it in advance to get it to go into orbit when it got there, because there's the time delay with communications. I think they said the time for the radio waves to go from the Juno, which I guess you can think of an explorer as on the ground. Well, this was still, it's a probe, drone, whatever. You know, all these things kind of have fuzzy overlaps as to their meanings, but this was a programmable tool that we sent out there to explore Jupiter. And they had to program it in advance because there's no steering this thing with a 48-minute delay like that. You know, and it just had to phone home when it successfully got into the orbit without spinning off into space or falling into Jupiter or getting hit by dust at supersonic speed in the orbit around Jupiter. So anyway, it's kind of funny. There's a headline on Drudge today that NASA shuts down live space station feed as mysterious UFO enters the atmosphere. This is not the first time that I've heard headlines like this. The International Space Station, of course, it's occupied by people and they're doing science experiments up there and all this, but there are cameras that kind of always run. You know, there's this live feed you can watch along the side of the space station, and it's got this view down on the Earth as it's orbiting over the Earth, and the Earth passes below you, and you see the clouds pass by the solar panels, and it's all very beautiful. And always on the edge of, not always, once in a while, on the edge of perception, at like the horizon with the Earth, something kind of fuzzy will kind of drift into view and make a few deliberate moves so that you know it's not just a piece of space debris. And then it'll just kind of fade back into the horizon. And when these things happen, this is not the first time. The headline is on Drudge right today. But NASA will just cut the live feed, and you don't get to watch anymore. And this has happened at least twice that I know of. And if I go back over one of the YouTube channels I like to follow, you know, I'm sure it's happened several times. And, you know, and they talk about other planets, and you know, there are things on the surface that kind of look like they're not natural formations, like something built them, and then the next time you see that picture, all that stuff's been pixelated out or smudged out with a smudge tool, and you know, it's graphically altered. And you know, my friend that actually builds instruments for some of these probes, he denies any of that. But of course, you know, it might not be the data that he's analyzing. It, you know, he sends the tool and it analyzes what he gets back, and I don't know that he's analyzing actual photographs, so I don't know that much exactly what he does. But he kind of laughs at me when I when I ask them about this stuff. So, oh, well, what can I say? Let me scroll up again. Oh, it's just taking forever to load. They've got a little video here, and this is at themirror.co.uk. And, you know, you see these articles more and more on the British newspapers. They don't make the American ones that much unless it's a headline from Drudge. And, you know, Drudge will be happy to link to the stuff that the mainstream media doesn't really want to cover. And, you know, he'll link to something on Infowars.com and Alex Jones. If it's a newsworthy thing and the mainstream media isn't covering it, he'll link to it. And, oh, I'm so glad to see that this mirror.co.uk actually spells NASA with all capitals. It's an acronym, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, because so many times I'll read one of these articles from a British paper and they'll spell NASA, capital N, lowercase A-S-A, and it just bugs me to death because it's not a word. It's an acronym. Anyway, it says, the headline here, NASA, all caps, shuts down live International Space Station feed as, quote, mysterious UFO enters Earth's ear, unquote. The incident caused speculation online and is not the first time NASA have been accused of tampering with the feed. I don't know, I guess they can't decide what kind of a word it is, plural or singular. UFO spotters have raised the alarm after the International Space Station live feed cut out just as a large mysterious object appeared to enter Earth's atmosphere. The incident occurred on July 9th, that's just 3 days ago, and was first reported by prolific UFO hunter StreetCap1 in a video uploaded the same day. Huh, I haven't heard of StreetCap1. There's a bunch of these UFO chaser channels on YouTube, and this is one I haven't heard of, so I'll have to search it up. The enthusiast did not directly imply that the object was an alien spacecraft, saying this could well be a meteor or the like. But he implied that the camera being turned off was slightly sinister. What made it interesting was that the camera cut off when the UFO seemed to stop. That means, to me, taking a deliberate action in order to display that it's not a random piece of debris floating around. I mean, things don't just change direction or stop cold like that. They continue in their orbits. It's one of the laws of Newton's laws. You know, an object's motion tends to stay in motion unless it meets something that stops it. You know, other enthusiasts put forward theories, including one who suggested it could be the Chinese space cargo ship Tiangong 1. I don't know why they have such grammar problems here. Well, I'm the American, they're the British, they're supposed to be able to speak. Anyway, there are these headlines on Drudge recently, too, that an old piece of space debris of the Chinese space cargo ship that they abandoned out in orbit, that its orbit is decaying and it's going to come down and it's going to hit somewhere. And, you know, when we had debris come down, I know we've tried to steer things into the ocean, but the alarm is going out that the Chinese don't really have that good a control of this. And we just hope it doesn't hit on land, on people anywhere. You know, that a splashdown would be the ideal situation. Anyway, it continues on with pictures. Amazing NASA. Oh, there's a lowercase NASA. Mars picture shows alien message in Morse code on surface of Earth. Oh, that's another article they want me to go off to. I don't think I'll click on that. That one's too much for me. I have, but the article continues, and I guess this is who's speaking. I've lost track of who's speaking. Another enthusiast, that's all they identify him as. I have watched the International Space Station a lot over the last 6 years, and I can tell you that this is not the moon nor a meteor, he wrote. It may be the Chinese space station cargo ship called Tiangong 1 or the other one, Tiangong 2. This is not the first time that UFO hunters have accused NASA of cutting transmission after a mysterious UFO appeared on the live ISS stream, that's the International Space Station. And as a spokesperson made a statement earlier in April denying allegations that NASA technicians deliberately shut down transmission when UFOs appear on the live video. Well, scroll down. According to the spokesperson, NASA never intentionally shuts down the live transmissions to hide UFOs. Loss of video is usually due to a loss of signals from the International Space Station. Well, I don't know what to believe. I'll have to go search that up and watch the video later. But why does Drudge link to it? It, you know, I guess I should I wish I could interview him someday. Like, why do you link to this stuff? If it's just crackpot stuff, I mean, he's not known for, at least in my circles, he's not known as crackpot stuff. He, you know, links to high-profile legal cases, a lot of politics, a lot of button issues around the world. But this NASA stuff, it's either heating up on its own or it's heating up with Drudge's help. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. But, you know, we should send a robot, space probe up to go find out. Go, you know, find some of these things making deliberate moves in our vicinity and kick them in the slats and see if they respond. I don't know. But they have on some more articles here. Going back to Dallas and expert using robot to kill a suspect. No, Amazon closer to a warehouse robot army, and that's been coming. That's obviously been coming. The pick and pack, automating the whole pick and pack when you order on Amazon. You know, they have warehouses and warehouses, miles of warehouses. And I once toyed with the idea of going to work for a Target pick and pack warehouse south of Tucson. And they had just built the building, and it was January. And they recruited us all in, and you know, we're sitting there, and they're in this, they're giving us the intro and the speech. And we were inside the building, and I was really cold. And I had questions about the climate control inside the building, because I knew in southern Arizona it can get up well over, you know, 105, particularly in a building like that. And I guess we're supposed to presume that they have evaporative cooling or cooling of some kind, or their inventory would melt, because it can get really hot. And, you know, I can take a few days of really hot, but in Arizona, it over 100 degrees from May to October. Easily 6 months of the year, and it's just grueling. You can't work like that, you know. And I was so cold in January sitting there. I was like, they don't have very good climate control in here, do they? And I raised my hand and I said, what kind of cooling do you have in here? And you just have the air-cooled evaporative cooling. It'll be fine, you know. We did the study. We're all in Minnesota, and we did the study of Arizona. This is how you guys do the cooling. And I'm like, I'm leaving right now. I'm sorry. You're wrong. You're wrong. Your people will not survive this. You'll be taking them out on stretchers, you know, running up and down the aisles. And I left at that point. And they're like, I'm sorry. I have enough self-dignity to know when somebody is really stupid. Anyway, so they have this picture here. This is The Guardian. This is also British. Now, why do they have these articles? All the interesting stuff seems to be on the British papers, not on the American mainstream. It's because the American mainstream, they all sing the same song every day. There's not a lot of variety. They're all singing, you know, on the political scene, they're all singing the same song about the protests and the candidates, and, you know, and that's why people are so sick of the pabulum that this election season has really got into meltdown, because people are just want to shove it down the throats of the establishment and the establishment media and the globalists that are trying to sell us, you know, one world government. Everything will be homogenized. No more diversity. We're all going to do unity, 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 unity. No diversity, no diversity. And it'll all be unity. You can't acknowledge that other people might be different, might want to be different from you, you know. Anyway, I'm digressing. But this, as they wipe out all the minimum wage jobs with the trade deals, you know, they wipe out your job so that they can hire a slave labor job in another country, and even take it even further. They're going to all robotics, and, you know, I am of a cynical bent, at least on the vaccine issue, and I see the Georgia Guidestones where they want to, you know, they view actual human population as pestilence and want to reduce the human population to 500 million people. We're 7 billion now, so that's 500 million. They want to reduce the population by 13/14. That's insane. And they're going to declare you superfluous to the economy and inject you with these dangerous vaccines. And, you know, I follow a lot of anti-vax, you know, groups on Facebook, people that have actually done the digging, and they'll post the ingredients of the vaccines. And you reach a conclusion when you read enough of these really, really dangerous ingredient lists that do cull off a certain percentage of the population, 5% a year, so who knows, you know, different for each vaccine, that they really are bioweapons. And anyway, so I've been digressing, but I, you know, if they're replacing all the minimum wage jobs with robots, and then they're culling off the population because they've declared these people superfluous to the economy, who do they think they're going to sell to? You know, I guess the robots will be out of a job eventually too, and then we have this worldwide planet of all these stagnant, stalled robots because there's no people left to serve. And I don't buy this whole thing, oh, if we give robots artificial intelligence, they will be better versions of ourselves. Like, no, a machine does not have a heart and emotions. And they're trying to program in now these artificial emotions. I think that's the headline on Drudge today, too. Artificial emotions in robots so they can just, I guess, relate to each other because there won't be any people left. But anyway, the article's kind of funny. Let me go back to where it was. Shoot, I changed tabs. Give me a moment. Oh, Amazon moves one step closer to an army of warehouse robots. Robotics competition prize for the best warehouse working ticker machine awarded to robot designed by a Dutch team. Kiva Robots is a picture here. Kiva Robots transport goods at an Amazon fulfillment center ahead of the Christmas rush in Tracy, California in 2014. Well, I guess it's more up to date than I thought. You know, they didn't hire minimum wage people for that one. And I wonder what the Target thing, if it ever got off the ground in Southern Arizona. I don't know. Amazon's progress toward an army of helpful robots is one step closer. A prize for the best warehouse working ticker machine has gone to a robot designed by a team from TU Delft Robotics Institute and Delft Robotics, both based in the Netherlands. The competition was held in conjunction with Germany's RoboCup in Leipzig, announced on Monday. The winners took home $25,000, while the University of Bonn's NIMRO won $10,000 for second place, and Japanese firm PFN was awarded $5,000 for third. The contest, in Amazon's words, aimed to strengthen the ties between the industrial and academic robotic communities and ended with slightly fewer than half of the entrants scoring more than 20 out of 40 possible points, according to a report in Tech Republic. Technology is advancing quickly. All of those contestants would have surpassed the highest score in the previous picking challenge held just 3 years ago. To compete on 29 January, the robots tried to perform a number of tasks using, quote, books, cubic boxes, clothing, soft objects, and irregularly shaped objects, and a box provided by Amazon. The robots had to take items out of the box and put them on the correct shelf and remove shelved items and put them into the box. They've got some video here. Object recognition is difficult for robots. Yeah, they can't tell the sky from the side of a semi-truck. A UC Berkeley project from 6 years ago was hailed as a breakthrough when the robots developed by the university's team was able to fold 5 never-before-seen towels over the course of an hour and 40 minutes. Hour and 40 minutes. Did it encase them in plastic and put them in the Will Robinson washing machine? I don't know. The team produced a video sped up 50 times for those in a hurry. So if you want to see your robot work fast, you video it and then you play it and fast forward. There's something a little weird about that. I don't know. The project is close to what the U.S. military division DARPA asked robots to do during its robotics grand challenge in Pomona, California in 2015. The idea of robots surpassing humans in service jobs or on the battlefield tends to give spectators pause. But for the moment, at least, the human factor isn't going anywhere. The Delft team's robot scored very high on the list of tests, but it's still, and you don't want that kind of an error when you're using a robot as a weapon. 16%, oh my gosh. Tech Republic points out that the robots were able to retrieve 100 items an hour, where humans were able to retrieve 400 items per hour, and the human would be unlikely to drop 67 of those items. I guess that means the robot did drop 67 out of 100 items. Just as DARPA did last year, Amazon is downplaying the possibility that humans will lose jobs to robots. Well, of course they're going to downplay it. The company already uses robots made by Kiva, the robotic company it bought in 2012 for $775 million in 13 of its warehouses, and points out that it has increased human headcount since introducing Android coworkers. Wow, images of Data, the Star Trek guy, the green guy, either Android or images of myself. Following the word Android is just overused now. It originally just meant robot. As far as you knew, it just meant robot, but now we're all confused with the phones. One U.S. Navy officer interviewed by The Guardian at the DARPA Challenge, theorized that Google's purchase of Boston Dynamics, the firm that solidly outperformed it with robots that could maintain computers. Well, yeah, I guess you could have them swap out hard drives and stuff. And this is robots as tools. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. You know, I'm all for progress forward. And if somebody is in a job they really don't like, you know, hopefully this will give people time to, you know, create new things. You know, there's beauty in creating new things and advancing and, you know, going out into the stars and the planets and or just new art. And I know people kind of cynically laughed at Nancy Pelosi, and I'm not a fan of Nancy Pelosi. But when she was talking about she wasn't pitching just the minimum wage. I believe it was just the minimum welfare. If the whole world's on welfare, then maybe you can do something more fun with your time. You know, follow a dream and write your book and all that. But somewhere there has to be money exchanging hands. You know, all these robots, you know, if you equate people to money, you've got a problem. You know, money is a tool, like robots is a tool. You can't value people by money. And so all of these things society has to figure out. And use robots as weapons is a big, scary thing. You know, we just saw this thing in Dallas, and it was a first. And the drone as a weapon was another first just a few short years ago. And now we have a killer robot car. This is on today's Drudge. And it was a headline a few years ago. If you have a passenger in your car and a pedestrian, and the car has to make a choice between running over the pedestrian, killing the pedestrian, or swerving and causing another accident where its passenger gets killed, how does it choose between people? Which people die? And, you know, I never was a fan of these quote-unquote ethical questions, you know, where that was the fashion when I was in middle school. Ask the kids, okay, you have a bunch of people in a life raft and it's just too crowded and it's going to sink and you're running out of food. So, you know, who do you throw overboard so you can live longer? And it's like, it was a game I never played well. I failed it every time because I don't throw people overboard. You know, I'd rather have us all starve than have us turn evil and throw people over. And that's me. You know, that comes from my spiritual upbringing in my family as a child, that the ends never justify the means. People, you know, if you want the whole boat to live and you want to, like, hit one of them over the head and you all turn cannibals, you know, it's better to die than to do evil. And it's, you know, because we believe in another plane, a higher plane, where good is good and evil is evil and the Lord sorts them out. And that's my background on this, that the ends never justify the means. Anyway, the headline on this is the New York Times. As U.S. investigates fatal Tesla crash, company defends autopilot system. Okay, this is the guy that hit the truck, or the car hit the truck. Even as federal safety officials step up their investigation of the fatal crash of a driver operating a Tesla to engage, the company continues to defend the self-driving technology as safe when properly used. Well, yeah, it should be safe. And you know, I remember a time even before there were seatbelts required in cars, and, you know, and that was, oh gosh, that was 50 to 60 years late. Because the truth is, my great-grandmother was killed by not having a seatbelt. They were headed into a horrible accident, and she leaned up to push her son down into the seat so he wouldn't go flying. She saw the impact coming. She saved his life, but she was thrown, and she was killed on the hood ornament. So now, hood ornaments are very rare. They did get rid of those. But when you see them, they're spring-loaded, and that's the reason, because people were getting killed on the hood ornaments. And and it took them another 50 years to get around the seatbelts in the cars. You know, they had them in the jet pilot seats, but we didn't have them in the cars. And I remember, you know, when I was a teeny tiny kid, we had a car without seatbelts, and we got a new car that had seatbelts, and that was a newfangled thing. And, you know, we weren't landing on the moon yet. We were sending people up into space. And we kids, they were lap belts, and we would lay down on the seats with a window, and we'd buckle up upside down and play like we were astronauts as mom and dad were driving down the seat. We'd be in the back playing astronauts. So, oh, memories. how technology moves on. You know, now everybody's got these three-point systems and these, you know, seatbelts across the neck that are supposed to be across the shoulder. And, you know, anyway, the National Highway, back to the article, Safety Administration on Tuesday released a detailed set of questions for the car maker about its automated driving system, particularly the emergency braking function. The autopilot system has been the subject of federal investigation. This goes on and on. So this is about an accident. It's not really about a killer robot. Lack of customer education is a very real risk, the executive said. Granted, this is not a killer robot. This is an accident that happened. So I should check and see. Let me check the right thing here if anybody is looking to join the conversation. And, yes, we do have somebody looking to join the conversation. So you know what? Let me hold off joining that for just a moment here because it is time for another break. And we'll be back in a moment, and then I'll take your call. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo. Be sure to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Justice Club on Freedomizer Radio. Grab a snack, grab a latte, grab a friend, or grab a stranger. I've been on the front lines for 25 years, and I've been labeled as the crusader for equal rights by the media many times. So join my crusade on the Justice Club at Freedomizer Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Solutions to Delusion. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution radio show from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our calling number is 347-324-3704 to listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Seems things are happening so fast now. And again, I want to thank you for the privilege of allowing me to be with your audience and with you tonight. Everyone out there in your listening audience, they should listen to you every single day. Don't you miss a program. Lord bless. Everybody set that spiritual house in order. It's the most important thing out there. Thank you and good night.
Are you sick of being a chump, lied to by politicians and businessmen alike, watching as the world slowly burns, as trillions of debts racked up under your grandchildren's names? Hi, I'm Ben Lucifer Bernanke Cochran. I'm asking that you tune into my weekly radio show, The Patriot Power Hour with Lucifer Bernanke, each Thursday night at 6 p.m. Eastern on Freedomizer Radio. Look, I'm not trying to sell you anything here. I just need your help fighting these banks of scum. The sick fans behind all the wars, failed healthcare system. I mean, they own all the mega banks, all the mega corporations. They own the media, of course. They've already conquered most of humanity, really. And their juiciest, vile target. Well, we're next. America's next. So I'm not going out without a fight. So join me Thursday as I use my background in finance and risk management to decode breaking news and developments, all while helping to prepare you and your family for the future waves of financial terrorism that are sure to come. Thursday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Shalom, and praises to the Father. More and more, we see the lies and the deceptions of the world. Where it should be obvious, we are in a spiritual battle. So I'd like to invite you to tune into the Sound Doctrine Ministries Fellowship Program right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network, where we will reason together according to the Holy Scriptures. Also, blessing you with an occasional guest, our spiritual common sense commentary, and spiritual uplifting songs that give praises to our Father. You can call in and speak to our host, or just listen to the show at 347-324-3704 every Tuesday and Saturday, noon Pacific Standard Time, 2 p.m. Central, right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Or you can tune into our chat room at freedomizerradio.com. Blessings and peace to your heart.
Hi, so we're back, and we have a caller joining us. Hi, is that you, Ed? I think I recognize your phone number.
Hi, Suzanne. Yeah,
hi.
It's me.
Hi.
Earlier in the show, you've been all around robots today, but earlier you were saying something about, you know, how vehicles in space, I mean, that are like circling the Earth, like the space station and other kinds of, you know, manned mission stuff, they pick up, they see images of unexplainable, you know, lights or phenomena or blips or whatever, and that it seems like it could be UFOs, right?
Yeah, that's headline from Drudge today, you know, and it's not the first headline like that.
I got to tell you a funny thing. This is such a coincidence. Last night I was watching on YouTube, I was watching an old episode from the 1950s of a show called Science Fiction Theater, which was one of the first legitimate, really interesting things that, you know, on TV preceded Twilight Zone by about 5 years, that blended science with science fiction and fantasy. But most of the protagonists in there, almost all the characters in there, are engineers or astronauts or some sort of military or some kind of really interesting kind of men with real substantial careers, and there's nothing flaky about it. You know, the one that I saw last night that really intrigued me, that I thought would plug into the show, is one where a pilot of an experimental plane goes up. It's very similar to the X-15, you know, which they had back there in the 50s. And they were going, the test pilot was going through Mach 2 and Mach 3, and he was up at 40,000 or 50,000 feet or whatever. And you know, they were listening to him down at, wherever it was, in the Mojave Desert, you know. And all of a sudden he says, there's something here. It's like, it looks like, I can't identify it. It's crazy. It's parallel. It's going parallel to my course, but I think it's going to crash. I think it's going to crash into the plane. He said, I got to bail out. So he bailed out at 40,000 feet, and he came down safely. And of course, the plane crashed. And then they were reconstructing for weeks.
40,000 feet.
What could have happened? Well, something like I believe that was a high. I guess in the 50s, before you know. Well, maybe they already had the jets, but that was I think
40,000.
It could have gone to 1,000. It could have gone to 100,000 feet, probably. But I think that's what they said in the show.
The History Channel had on the D.B. Cooper case the other night, and D.B. Cooper arranged for them to have the plane flying low enough that he jumped out at 10,000 feet.
Sure, he was
that's why he wouldn't pass out from lack of oxygen.
Well,
this was the old FBI case that's pending for decades.
Well, this guy landed okay, but then as they were reconstructing this, and he stuck to a story that he saw a UFO, and then they pieced together that, well, wait a second, you had this pen in your pocket, like a fountain pen or something. Like it was crazy. I mean, they wouldn't let an astronaut go up like that, but they let this experimental pilot go up with this pen in his pocket and said, what we theorize happened is that this pen got free of your pocket and was actually floating because you were in a weightless condition for a few minutes. You know, you were weightless, and you saw this in the cabin. So it wasn't outside the plane at all. It was in the cabin, and he was a little woozy maybe from, you know, all the stress and flying at Mach 3 and everything like that to realize what it was. And anyway, there were some other twists to the story, but here's my question. When they see these things in space, are they for sure looking at them with cameras that are outside the spacecraft, or are they looking at them with cameras that are inside the spacecraft? Because
I don't know. Some of
the
Apollo
astronauts
use cameras inside the craft, some of the Apollo astronauts, but these, as far as I know, these space station cameras are mounted to the outside.
Oh, really?
As far as I know.
That's very significant. Because if this is being filmed from the inside, then you know how you've seen some of these that look almost like little blobs, They could be water droplets.
Yeah.
They could be anything. And they go a little bit one direction, and they stand still, and then they go in the other direction or whatever. Some of those could actually be not molecules, but, you know, small whatever that's floating in the cabin of the spacecraft. That's if the camera's on the inside. If the camera's on the outside, of course it's not. It's something that's out there. It's actually in space.
Yeah. Well, all people got to do is follow that link and go look at the video themselves, and they can decide. But there's something funny about these things because, I mean, I've seen these types of videos multiple times on YouTube, you know, UFO Hunter channels, and they're always like just barely out of perception. They're just too far away to focus on them, and then they just kind of they fade in and then they fade out and then they're gone. And, you know, it's almost like it's like somebody's toying with us. Somebody's toying with us, we're fantasizing, seeing things, you know, or they'll. I know there's a guy in Phoenix that posts things up on YouTube, and I don't remember which channel he is. I've come across him once or twice, and he'll look at this sparkly thing out in a sunset, and it's just kind of like sitting there, and then it's not anymore. Well, if you replay it and stare at it, you see it kind of sinks into a cloud. So it didn't really just disappear. And I know, I'm pretty sure Luke Air Force Base is out there, and I think maybe they're weather balloons, at least as far as this guy posting in Phoenix. But from the space station, something kind of like comes into view, makes us, you know, a couple of wolves. You know, it's not a uniform blob, but you can see it changing color as it takes a few tumbles, and then maybe it'll change directions a couple of times, and then it kind of like fades down, fades into the distance again. You know,
but would weather balloons do that? Would weather balloons go back and forth like that? I don't know.
Well, maybe if they're drones, maybe if they're remote control, but
do you know?
You know,
oh, if
out
they're drones,
space,
if they're motorized,
you have a balloon thing. You know, if it's something
in UFOs,
the atmosphere, then you can drive it.
Yeah. UFOs
you
have been blamed on weather balloons since Roswell, you know? I mean, that was blamed on a weather balloon or something originally.
Yeah, here I am. I'm like, I think there's something there, but I don't think everything we look at is there, you know? And we have all these, you know, there was an article this week, actually, it popped up in several channels, and I think online somewhere, this article claiming that Putin is telling Obama, you better tell the world about aliens, or I will, you know? Sometimes there's a translation issue because now they're saying, no, I didn't call Donald Trump brilliant last year. I just called him bright. Well, I can see where brilliant versus bright could have a translation problem. You know, they're still, you know, I mean, Trump is, if he wants to take it as a compliment, let him. Why should he stir up and say, oh, I'm offended by whatever Putin said, you know, and why should everybody be shaking their branches at each other, you know, like chimpanzees that are angry, or, you know, apes that they'll try to scare each other by whacking branches around, you know. Why should we all be, you know, beating our chest by getting just, oh, I'll take the compliments. So I think anything Putin ever says to him, if Trump is elected, I think anything Putin ever says, Trump will say, well, thanks for the compliment, let's do it this way, and people won't know what to do with it.
I remember one time, my son,
when he was such a toddler, he was such a little tiny guy. He was about 5 years old, and he was a little guy. And we were at the playground, and there were some kids there that were much bigger than him, and they were kind of looking for a fight. And I don't know what this Chris, you know, my son, he did something that I never saw a kid do, and I never would have thought of it before in my life. You know, he was such a little cute kid. He just threw open his arms like, give me a hug, and these kids were like, oh. he's so cute. I guess I like him after all. And they stopped hassling him, you know. And there was a CNN video yesterday of these Black Lives Matter marchers in Dallas, and there was a counter-protest across the street, and the leaders of the two groups decided to, you know, come to the middle of the street and talk a little bit. And the next thing you know, the two groups, the guys with the Confederate flags in the back of the truck and the American flags, and they were tough with the cowboy hats, they're all hugging with the Black Lives Matter people. They're hugging in a big circle, and they had a big prayer meeting. And the cop that was there to keep them separated actually joined them in the prayer meeting. And this is, you know, a CNN
that's
thing. So
they should film it.
Yeah, that's really – well, they did. Somebody did film it, you know, because I saw the video. And you know, it couldn't have been fake, could it? CNN wouldn't give us something fake, would they? I don't know. But that should be the strategy, you know. When the two teams all get to Cleveland, yeah, they can take George Soros' money to go there and wave their signs. And then you know, the counter protesters or the pro jumpers can go wave their signs, and then they can all just hug, and just be wonderful, you know, because we're all Americans. Yeah, we're all Americans, and you know, nobody wants this racial stuff. Everybody wants to solve, you know, racial communications and all that, and that would be the way to do it. You know, you don't do it by, you know, by this tribalism kind of thing that, you know, you want to that. We know George Soros is paying for it because they're finding the ads on Craigslist. We need protesters, you know, for this event and that event. We need Black Lives Matter and whatever. Because they're, you know, the Craigslist ads come up. So we know that a lot of these people are being instigated and paid. And there are people that would love to see, you know, the riots break out. So they, as an excuse to bring in the goose-stepping even the international European troops. First, they want to federalize the police, but, you know, the police aren't cooperating too much with federalization. It's just in the American psyche that police is local. So they're bringing in, you know, this Strong Cities Initiative. That's what Loretta Lynch was doing in Phoenix when she met Clinton. She was here having meetings about the UNification of the local police, the Strong Cities Initiative. Well, I'm of a cynical bent, so I read events like that. But, you know, and so when they want to federalize the police and bring them out, they're going to actually bring them out in blue hats. But, you know, of course, with their drones and their robots and their you know, tanks or whatever, they've pre-positioned these people. So there won't be any wait time. As soon as, you know, they get enough of riot era there to declare martial law, they will just – there'll be no lead time. They will already be in position. Now, if all these people that are supposed to be rioting – are hugging each other instead, what are you going to do, Mr. Obama? Your tribalism doesn't work here. We're Americans. We're used to being a big mixed lot of a lot of races. That's what America is, you know, and we all came here. We live under an idea of freedom and you know, a common culture. You know, yes, do we have our different ethnic foods and our music and our stuff, but you know, it all does come down to, you know, people under the law. Now, some people don't really buy that. We see these unfortunate events in Washington, but you know, the goal is to just control us all as if we're robots. They want to control the population. You know, of you're going to take all your shots, and you're going to work until we decide you're superfluous, and then you're going to take your euthanasia shot and die as a duty instead of a right. And, you know, well,
let the legislators start. What if the people who came up with that law be the first in line, you know, to get their euthanasia shot?
I'm a little confused. The law,
if they're giving out euthanasia shots, let the legislators who bring it about be the first ones to volunteer.
Well,
you're
doing right now, they're doing it by trickery. There, some of these vaccines really are. And if they don't manage to kill you, the HPV vaccine, it's causing ovarian failure in a lot of girls. You know? So it's called the self-kill. Maybe they don't kill you, but maybe you won't have any children. And so by the time you die, then it reduces the world population just that much.
At what age does it create the ovarian problems in these girls? You make it sound like
they're
young girls.
They start giving it to them. They start giving it to them at like 11 or 12, and then they get another shot a year or two later, or a few months later, or whatever. And, you know, girls in their teens, they're getting ovarian failure. And some of them are getting these horrible autoimmune neurological disorders where they are just crying in pain. If you go to YouTube and you put in the search box, the HPV shot did this to my child, you'll be crying for days if you watch it. This girl is in such horrible pain. And there's some that are in Spanish that are a little harder for me to search on because I don't know Spanish, but I have seen video where they just gave all the girls in this Mexican school the HPV shot, and they are all living on the floor in pain. All the girls are living on the floor in pain. It's, you know, so this thing is really, really, really dangerous, and you shouldn't have to have it to go to school because the only way to get HPV, you know, is sexual contact. And, you know, why would you need an HPV shot to go to school? You know, what do they expect these kids to be doing in the classroom? You know, you're not going to be transmitting any contagion.
Someone's assuming that all these girls are having sex. Is that the idea? I don't know. When I was,
or that they will someday, or that they will someday. Really? Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't be having it in the classroom. That's for darn sure.
Or anywhere around.
That's crazy. You know, underage kids. You know, they're, oh, well, it might help you not get cancer when you're in your 40s. It's like, well, you know what? We know a lot of better ways to not get cancer anymore. One is maybe these girls aren't going to choose a, what's the word?
Healthier lifestyle?
Multiple partner lifestyle. Maybe some of these girls, you know, certainly Mexico has a Catholic background. A lot of these girls are just going to marry and you know, have a minimum of partners their lives. You know, that's,
there you go.
You can't presume on somebody's future life, on what they're going to choose. And that's kind of the sneering attitude of some of these people that push I don't call it sex education. I call it sex training in the schools. You know, the common core means the bottom denominator. They treat everybody like they're an animal. And that's, you know, it's very soulless. It just sucks the soul out of these kids. And, you know, that's my cynical bent. Hey, that brings me to another topic that that I see come up frequently on Drudge, is robots as friends and lovers. And I can't think of anything more disgusting than, you know, it's like, forget that. You know, I don't do this, you know, even you.
You mean you prefer human beings?
The blow-up dolls. Instead of blow-up dolls, now these are robotics things. But there's, where did it go? Oh, I guess I refreshed my page. Robot killer car. I have to search through the page now. There's too many headlines. Oh, it was just there this afternoon.
Oh.
And it was about robots trying to relate on the emotional level. On the emotional level, I have to search back through their archives to find it. But it was about robots trying to relate on the emotional level. It's kind of like Pinocchio. Now I'm a real boy, you know?
Hey, Suzanne, how are the human beings who are developing these robots that are becoming smarter and smarter? I mean, like the super robots, right, that are going to be running computers and stuff like that. Or maybe it's the computers themselves I'm thinking about that are getting smarter and smarter. Who's going to keep them in line and keep them working for mankind instead of turning against it? Do you think they have to put some kind of idea in them, quote-unquote idea, that we are their parents or that we are their gods, that they must never even think of doing anything harmful to human beings or something like that? I know there's even been science fiction movies about this.
What was it? What's her name? Hailey Barry was in this show last year. It was on CBS and it was on Amazon. And it was, what was the name of it? And it was all about this exact this exact question.
Robots taking over, in other words, right? Robots taking over and maybe doing away with human beings.
Well, it starts out, they build this android boy for her. She wasn't able to have children, so her husband designs this robot for her, and then he designs this fleet of robots. And then the government stepped in and had them reprogrammed as weapons, you know, as a super army. And where's her, what was the name of that series? It was only a year ago, and I watched all episodes of it. I'm scrolling through her Wikipedia to get the name of the show. I did. I watched all 10 episodes, and they left it a little bit hanging so that there's room for another episode. Mm-hmm. But it was
seems like it could be a real crisis to humanity at some point in the future if they put more and more, if they give more and more autonomy to these robots, and the robots at some point, you know, take over. Even I think Asimov even had stories about that. Like, didn't he have
iRobot, the iRobot book. And then they later made a movie out of it after he died. They kind of strung the stories together in the book into one big plot. That show last year, that was Extant, was the show, and that Halle Berry played in. And they built her this robot son, and then she went up in space as into the space station, and she was by herself for however many months that is, and she was up there, and she came back pregnant because some alien met her there and like, I don't know, blanked out her mind. And then, you know, so then it was the robots versus the human beings versus the aliens. And it was this big dramatic climax at the end of the series and all this. And
remember who won?
You know, it was too much. It was too many things to deal with, you know, humanity versus aliens, humanity versus evil humans, humanity versus robots. There were too many issues in that series. They were trying to cover it all, and I kind of got swamped by it. But, you know, but I stuck it out. But I couldn't, I don't relate. You know, I've been a programmer my whole life, my whole adult life, and I don't relate to computers as people. I relate to them as tools. And so these articles that come out about robots trying to relate on an emotional level, you know, emotions are also involved a lot in your hormones and your spiritual level, a dimension that they're never going to be put into robots. So you're not going to get a spiritual dimension in a robot. It's just that comes from the spiritual, you know, realm, the higher being, you know, that comes from it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're putting out all these scare articles, and I'm just laughing them off because, you know, yes, they can be used as weapons, like we saw last week, but it's going to be driven by a human being. Real evil comes from people.
Yeah.
You know, people do it. And they're not going to foist it off. And, oh, just blame the robot went amok. Oh, we programmed it to run amok, but you're not supposed to know that. You're just supposed to know that the robot ran amok. And you're not supposed to know that vaccines are a bioweapon. That's just a mistake. Like that article about the guy that died in the car, the self-driving car. The headline was robots as killer, but that wasn't a killer. That robot didn't intentionally kill him. It was an accident. That was an accident waiting to happen. And we'd all drive cars, and we can have accidents, and you don't blame the car, just like you don't blame the gun that shot those cops in Dallas last week. You blame the shooter. All evil comes from people. Now, they can be communicating to some evil dimension, but it always evil can't happen without a human hand on it.
But you never want to let the robot know that. You never want to give the robot the idea that there's
robots
anything.
Robots don't know anything. They're data processing.
No, but they're
robots
getting smarter.
Are data processors.
And now they're having robots that are having consciousness, they say, that have the glimmerings of consciousness very much the same way that human have.
Lie. They want you to think that. Robots can, they have databases, and they have programmed them as to grow their dating bases, so they quote unquote say they're learning. But, you know, robots, they just grow their databases, and they don't necessarily reach conclusions.
I don't think a robot can reach conclusions. Start clicking around and around and around, and they go through databases again and again until it creates like thought, like a new thought or something would occur to them
I've seen
databases.
Newborn babies, amazingly, newborn babies are as smart as any adult in the room. They just haven't seen it before. Whatever it is they're looking at or whatever it is they're hearing, they just haven't seen it before.
Oh, okay.
But their intelligence is really obvious, and you know, because they're human beings and they're born intelligent. And unless they find a way to program these robots to draw conclusions from the data, I don't know. I am very, very skeptical about somebody telling me a robot has self-consciousness, because actually self-consciousness, if it was, that's not a soul. I mean, I would have no qualms if I felt threatened by a robot that had grown its database to quote-unquote reach a conclusion to kill me. I would have no problem shooting it with a lightning gun and just fry its circuits. I would have no problem with that. I would have no guilt. I wouldn't even feel less guilt than if I went hunting and shooting in the forest to feed my family. I would have
all
no guilt
is,
to just execute a robot.
I just think that human inventors who come up with these, you know, have to use some kind of very, you know, wise thinking about making humans invulnerable in the mind of the robots, sort of like making them into gods. We are the gods who created you. You will do your program, and you will not think about doing anything or tampering with humanity.
They want to be worshipped by the robots, but they also want to scare us and get us in line and get us with the program. Because if they can scare us, then they can control us. And
but we're
you
not
know,
robots.
A robot
that,
is not
right? going
to do anything that a person didn't program it to do, no matter how it grew that way. And we are running short on time, but. You know, I would never feel guilty about wiping out a robot.
Time. Isn't
that, never,
isn't
ever,
that the fifth
ever,
dimension
the
or something, right? Time, the fifth dimension is catching up with us.
You're right. I think it's I've been calling the spiritual world the fourth dimension, but that probably is the fifth dimension. I know, yeah, but time, yeah, length, height, width, and time, yeah, it's the fourth dimension. So we're getting close to the end here, but... beware of people trying to sell you robots as friends, people trying to sell you robots as lovers. Oh, my God, I can't think of anything more disgusting. You know, it's like, why don't you sell us bestiality? Why are you going to sell selling us this robot crap? You know, because they don't want you copulating with a human and actually having children. This is all about reducing world population.
Oh, I get it. So we don't reproduce. So we're happy with our robots.
Oh,
we play chess with the robot. We can go to bed with robots. So we can play chess with the robot. We can go to bed with robot, etc. Wow.
As long as you don't reproduce. And I am really sorry we're out of time here. And thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. And tune in next week for another fun show.
Good night, Suzanne.